From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in Portland, Oregon, all the way back in 1993. That was when Portland became the first American city to create a plan to reduce the use of carbon. And over the next two decades, interest in protecting the environment grew. And by 2015, Portland had expanded its CAP, its Climate Action Plan. There are a number of cities and local governments with their own CAPs now, and the city of Rochester is about to join the ranks. From this past January to June, the city of Rochester hosted stakeholder advisory meetings, and now it's time to get a look at the draft for our city's plan. Tomorrow, Rochester will host a public meeting about its climate action plan from 6 to 8 p.m. in the City Hall atrium. So that's tomorrow night, 6 to 8 p.m. in the City Hall atrium. And then relatively soon thereafter, in the coming weeks, maybe a few months, the plan could be adopted. But what is in it? How does the city plan to address transportation, emissions, carbon use, waste, and more? Let's discuss it with a variety of stakeholders, and our guests include, from the City of Rochester, Ann Spaulding is Energy and Sustainability Manager for the City of Rochester. Ann, welcome to you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
And offering some support is from Bergman Associates. Susan Hopkins is a project planner for Bergman Associates. And Susan, briefly, what's the role that Bergman has played in all of this?
Well, Bergman is supporting the city in pulling the plan together. And I should also mention that we worked with a group out of Fort Collins called the Brendel Group that's known nationally for pulling together climate action plans.
Okay, very good. Rachel Walsh is Eco District Coordinator for Greentopia. Rachel, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
Abby McHugh Griffith is a member of the Rochester People's Climate Coalition. So when you hear RPCC, that's what we mean, a Rochester People's Climate Coalition. She's co-leader of the Citizens Climate Lobby of Rochester. Abby, welcome to you.
Thanks, Evan.
And Scott Oliver is the Deputy for Energy Programs at Pathstone. Did I get it all correct there,
yep.
Scott?
Yes, that's
close
right.
Enough.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for being here. I want to start with Ann Spaulding from the City of Rochester. Ann, just give me a little bit of the background on the process. I tried to set it up as best I could, but how long has this plan been in the works for the City of Rochester?
So really, we've been working on climate action for many years, starting with our own operations for the City of Rochester, our municipal operations. We've been working to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, reduce energy consumption in a variety of ways through energy efficiency, through transportation. And we developed our own municipal climate action plan. So the next step that we wanted to take was to develop this plan for the community, which includes an emissions reduction goal and also strategies to reduce greenhouse gas emissions across a variety of focus areas, including energy, transportation, waste, land use, and water.
And now we're at a point where, you know, it looks like, I mean, I can see the actual physical draft right in front of you. I've had a chance to kind of go through it myself here. But how done of a done deal is this? How much time is there? Is the public feedback still going to be valued for this?
Absolutely. So we have the plan posted on the city's website right now, as well as the public open house that you mentioned. So we're anxious to get public input, and we will certainly take all comments into consideration. So we're open to make changes if necessary.
All right. Abby McHugh Griffith is with the Rochester People's Climate Coalition and the Citizens Climate Lobby. And I think it's important to point out that those are groups that have been growing in Rochester, but they're also the kind of groups that, I mean, I'm sure you've got friends and colleagues now nationwide who've grappled with these kinds of plans and proposals in other cities, yes?
Well, you know, not enough cities have these, and we are so grateful to Rochester for taking a real leadership role, and in particular for the work she's done on this. We can't even begin to really express that. Certainly it is our role in the community to push this as far as we can, and we would like to see it strengthened. But the plan is good, and we are very supportive of what's in there.
Is this overly reductive to say that RPCC kind of views this as something's better than nothing, but we can make it stronger and better than it currently is proposed?
We can definitely work with this. There's a lot of great material in there. There's also places where we could just make it a little bolder. And we can talk about specifics of that later if you'd like.
Yeah, in a moment, we're going to start kind of cycling through the plan and some of the what's in that draft. Listeners, if you've got questions or comments about Rochester's Climate Action Plan, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Rachel Walsh, who is the Eco District Coordinator for Greentopia, you view this plan how going forward? How significant is this plan, and what do you think Greentopia's role is?
I think this plan is great on getting everybody on the same page as far as where we want to be goal-wise. Because Greentopia's role, and specifically through the Eco District, is really a collaborative implementation protocol. So it's this idea of how do we do this together so that it gets implemented quickly and effectively and with the most really bang for what we're trying to do. So I think it's great to just start off with having something that gets us all on the same page as far as where we're going.
Okay, and I think Scott Oliver, grab that mic, who's the Deputy for Energy Programs at Pathstone. I think your role and Pathstone's role is maybe the least understood of the group here. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Pathstone and where you stand in this process?
Well, Pathstone in general is a very large housing nonprofit in the city of Rochester, mm-hmm. and we've been a stakeholder in this process. And so we see it from both the landlord side and as a promoting energy efficiency throughout the area. And the plan has been really good in that there's a commitment to work with us as stakeholders in implementing the plan. And this isn't just a dead document on arrival. It's going to be a live document that we can continue to, you know, implement together. So,
all right, two things here. I know you've got something coming up. Pathstone has something coming up. Is it tonight? Yes. Later this week?
Just tonight. We have a workshop tonight at 5:30 at 404 East Avenue. We're going to be talking about residential energy efficiency programs available to everybody in New York State.
Okay, so 5:30 tonight.
Tonight.
At 404 East Avenue.
Yes.
And come one, come all if you want to learn,
yep,
I guess.
Come on over. We'll have some beverages, and we'll let you know what's available for you out there.
Okay, and when it comes to residential energy, that's just sort of a slice of the pie here. How do you view that portion of what Rochester is trying to accomplish with its climate action plan?
Well, I think the climate action plan has some really good points, especially as far as how it looks at looking at rental properties, because that's a very big issue in this city where we have a lot of kind of absentee landlords, and they're willing to make that time when, you know, units turn over and when C of O happens as the time when we're going to look at the energy efficiency of those units. So it's actually implemented by the city, and that way we can actually get some stuff done. It's not going to be quite voluntary. Well, it's going to be more of something that landlords have to do to get their C of O, or at least that's what we're hoping to see.
Okay. Ann Spaulding, is that roughly correct then, that if you're a landlord, that there's going to be some new rules that you may have to follow under the Climate Action Plan? Is that correct?
Well, I think what we'll do is we'll be working collaboratively with many of these entities to find out what would work best. We don't want the plan to be a hammer. We want to make sure that we're all working together and coming up with plans and programs that will benefit everybody, and that won't be, as I said, a hammer for people, but will save them money in the long run through energy efficiency and make their homes better and more comfortable.
Fairly or unfairly, I'm going to be turning to Abby McHugh-Criff as kind of a bit of a referee on some of this discussion, because speaking broadly, I know you're interested in all aspects of this plan. And what I think Scott and Ann are talking about is this is an important moment to just ask a question, Abby, on what is viable, what may be going too far. We look at Paris. We look at the kinds of discussions that are taking place even pre-Paris, on the national level, on international levels. And one of the consistent refrains is any sort of climate action can't be economically destructive. And I know that that has frustrated you and many others who say that that is a false choice, that of course there is a green economy, et cetera, et cetera. But we know that that argument exists, or that concern exists, that if we put together a climate action plan, let's not hammer people in a way, or let's not move so fast away from carbon in a way. Let's not penalize landlords in a way that is economically destructive. How much, when you hear that concern, whether it's internationally or even right here in Rochester, do you think that's a fair concern, or how much do you think those are false arguments or concerns?
So there's a lot to unpack there, I think, Evan. You know, for starters, and this is one thing the plan lays out explicitly, the cost of doing nothing so exceeds the cost of, you know, what it's going to take to do this now. And it lays the numbers out actually very specifically that this plan will pay for itself, I believe, by 2037, I'm pretty sure that was the date. So in the short term, there's certainly an upfront investment there, but also huge opportunity to put people to work here in Rochester, to create jobs, you know, to get this done and get it done in a timely manner that meets the climate goals, you know, for keeping temperatures low, that we must achieve. I mean, there's no choice there. You know, it's dangerous to not implement this plan. So the cost that we will need to put up front does create a lot of jobs, a lot of opportunities for people in town, but also will pay for itself. So I think that is a false argument that it's too expensive. Now, who is going to financially benefit from it? Who is going to, you know, those are things that really will need to be ironed out. And another thing, you know, that we really appreciate about the way the city has put this plan together is it does focus on the need for social and economic justice as this plan is rolled out, and the need for incorporating the voices of those who maybe are typically not represented in this. So rather than a top-down approach, having this come from the community. Now, one thing to point specifically to, you know, where our critique of the plan might lie, we would love to see a provision in the plan specifically regarding use of local labor in the implementation of that. Correct me if I'm wrong, Anne, but I believe as of right now, there is nothing that specifically mentions that, you know, as these energy upgrades are, you know, in our residential housing stock, other building stock, that will be performed by, you know, local labor, unionized labor. So a lot of those issues could be addressed that would make sure that really that the opportunity that's created from this stays in our community.
Okay, and is that a possibility? And again, we're kind of passing mics around. It's a packed studio today. go ahead, Anne. Is that a possibility?
Yeah. So I think that you know, as you know, the mayor wants to create jobs in the city and is very interested in utilizing local labor on many of our projects. So this would certainly be no different. And I think as the plan becomes implemented, as we develop our focus area groups and work through some of these implementation actions, I think that's something that we will certainly be taking a good look at and striving toward. And as Abby said, implementing this plan really is a job creator. The green economy, there's a lot of opportunity for people in energy efficiency, renewable energy, all sorts of jobs that we think will come out of the implementing this plan.
Is a local labor requirement too firm in the city's eyes?
I don't think that I can answer that question for the city, but I know that we've had local labor requirements in other projects. I mean, this isn't a specific project, so I think
okay.
I think as we, you know, move through the implementation, it's something we'll certainly look at.
And for our listeners who want to kind of follow along at home and start to really dive in and learn more, where can they see more of the Rochester Climate Action Plan?
Sure. So the plan is posted right now at the city's website. So it's cityofrochester.gov/climateactionplan, all one word. And there's a link right at that site where you can download the plan as well as the flyer for the open house.
Listeners, I know you've already had some phone calls and questions and comments. Let's kind of work through there because there's so many different prongs here. I think listeners in many ways should drive this discussion. If you want to call the program with questions or comments about what you're seeing and the city of Rochester's forthcoming climate action plan, it's 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. As you've been hearing from the panelists, we have some CAPs, climate action plans, on the local level around the country, but not all that many yet. There's a lot more talk about these kind of CAPs happening, but Rochester is one of many cities now actually taking the steps to go ahead and do it. And they're not quite there yet. They've got this proposal. It could change. And the Citizens Climate Lobby would like to see it strengthened in some way. So we're talking about that. So Anne Spaulding is from the City of Rochester. She's the Energy and Sustainability Manager for the city. She's here along with the panel. And on the subject of what landlords have to do, an off-air question from a listener just wants to know, will incentives or financial support be available to landlords who are required to make changes to their properties?
There's currently a lot of incentives available to landlords through NYSERDA, New York State Energy Research Development Authority, and that's one of the things that we do at Pathstone is we help landlords realize what those incentives are and help them find them. There's a lot. You can get up to 75% of the work done off based on the income of your tenants. So there's definitely programs out there, and we just need the landlords to know about them because it helps the tenants and the landlords.
So, Scott Oliver, if you're a landlord or you want your landlord to know about this, who should they call?
They should call me, actually.
At Pathstone.
Yes, okay. Scott Oliver at Pathstone, 442-2030, extension 204.
Okay, so that's just one example. And Don in Rochester has got a question about renewables. And Don, go ahead.
Hi, I was wondering if the plan has any, if you're looking at all at the, you know, the river the old raceways in High Falls for hydro or maybe wind with the city's at least limited access to the lake.
Someone want to jump in there? Ann Spaulding, go ahead.
Sure. So, I can tell you that we do have renewable energy as one of our strategies, and as we work through implementation of the plan, we'll be developing focus area groups, and we'll be looking at different actions, such as what you talked about. So it's certainly a possibility that we can look at.
Okay. Anybody want to add anything on that subject?
Just in terms of the local renewable options that are available or that this plan we're excited about in it. Community solar is now coming online in Rochester and is possible for those who want to make the switch. Sustainable Energy Developments is working on that right now. And then one of the action items in the plan is the implementation of community choice aggregation, which is something we've been working on a lot. You might hear that referred to as CCA. Mm-hmm. The plan calls for that. What that would do is essentially bundle our energy usage together to lower our rates, allow the city to become the energy provider, and then that would become the default energy source. So renewable, local, and that's already in the plan. So very, very optimistic about that.
Okay. Don, does that answer your question?
Yeah, that sounds outstanding. I mean, Fairport has done something similar, right, in having their own electric, and their rates are better. And, if we can utilize some of those old raceways or whatever in High Falls, that would be excellent as well.
Thank you, Don. Someday someone will explain how Fairport Electric works to me. When I first moved here, everyone told me that's what you want, but I still, it's like this... It's like this, this magical thing in the woods that, it's just really... Anyway,
Someday when you have 20 minutes aside, we can talk about that.
Okay. 844-295-TALK if you want to weigh in with questions or comments on Rochester's climate action plan. Jacob on Twitter wants to know, is public transit part of the climate action plan? It not only reduces carbon emissions, but it could add pedestrian and green space. Ann Spaulding, you want to start with that for Jacob?
Sure. So we did have someone from RGRTA as a stakeholder, so they're certainly involved in the development of the plan. And public transit is absolutely a part of the plan, encouraging more public transportation, making sure that the routes that are available are the best routes for people, to encourage them to take public transit where possible. So the answer is yes. We're looking at that very closely.
Okay. Panelists, I'm curious to know how big a piece this is when it comes to public transit. Abby McHugh-Griffith, I'll start with you there. How significant do you feel this piece is?
Oh, well, certainly in terms of lowering our greenhouse gas emissions, transportation is major. And this is one area where we would like to see the plan strengthened. A lot about bikes and walking, making walking easier, but not as much as maybe we would like about actually improving the bus system and even thinking longer term, what would be some form of high volume transit. I'm going to throw the word light rail out there. I don't know if that would be the right one for our area. But, in the longer term, what are we looking at as we need to be moving more people around and getting less cars involved?
Okay, so you want to see this section strengthen.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to buses, or I guess I should ask then, you're talking about sort of different menu options here, maybe light rail. You're not standing here pounding the table saying it must be XYZ.
No, not at all. But public transit, that is something other than walking or biking. There's a lot of about electric vehicle charging stations, which is wonderful, but not accessible to everyone. And still, in terms of your climate impact, taking the bus, taking the train, if the train were an option, would be even better. And reduce congestion around our city, too.
Ann Spaulding from the City of Rochester, is that something, are those ideas that Abby just talked about, are those viewed in City Hall as financially viable, possible menu items here for improving the climate action plan, or does that seem like it's too expensive?
Well, it's a little hard for the city to answer that question since we don't run the bus system. So I think it'll be really important for us to work closely with them to coordinate and to make sure that they understand that, what we're trying to do, that we want to increase public transportation in the city. We want to make it easier for people to get to where they need to go by taking the bus. And, I think they've done a lot so far with the new the transit center.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously there's always room for improvement. So I think, you know, working with them closely on the implementation of the plan will go a long way.
Okay.
And also educating people. You know, a big part of this plan is letting people know what their options are, whether it's through public transportation or energy efficiency or renewable energy or buying a plug-in vehicle. Many people just don't know what their options are and what incentives are available. So I think that's probably the main thing that we can do is get the information out there to people so they can make these choices and reduce their carbon footprints.
Okay. Abby, for people who, you know, may look at the bus system now, RGRTA system now, and say, look, we already have a public transit system. It's called RGRTA. What am I missing there? What would you say to people who hear, okay, you're pushing for more outside of walking, outside of pedestrian and bicycle use, but we already have RGRTA. What's the message?
Oh, I'm not saying we should get rid of RGRTA, not by any stretch of the imagination. And again, what Anne talked about, you know, working in partnership with these different organizations is certainly essential for the success of this plan. But, you know, when you think of how do people get to work from, if they're coming in from Fairport, if they're coming in from Pittsburgh, I don't think they're taking the bus for the most part. And making some option that could move people around, really make it flexible, make it convenient, make it affordable. That's where we need to be headed just with climate action in general, right? Is getting away from our cars and towards more mass transit.
Are you discouraged about the discussions in this state, at least, in this region, at least, about light rail, about that kind of transit that haven't really generated much momentum?
Well, certainly we would love it if everyone were on board right away. Understandable, very expensive. And, you know, I think what we really need to make this kind of thing happen, and everything in the plan to make it a success, is the political will. And that's why we are hoping that a lot of people will show up to this meeting tomorrow night at City Hall in the atrium, 6 to 8 o'clock, to demonstrate that people want these options. And the only way that our city officials will know that, that RGRTA employees will know that, those who are making these decisions in positions of leadership, is for people to speak up and say so. So that's where we're at right now, is encouraging people to speak up and support this plan.
I want Rachel Walsh from Greentopia, if you want to weigh in on any of the prongs we've been discussing, especially when it comes to transportation. You know, how do you view some of that?
This is not going to be a popular answer, but I think transportation is going to be very, very difficult in this city. When you're talking about a 15 to 20-minute commute, even from the outskirts of town, there really is very little personal incentive to get on a bus. And I say that as someone who lived in a bigger city, and the only reason I would ride the bus is because it was twice as fast. There just isn't really the traffic here to make it worth someone's while to take mass transit. So unless you really, really care about climate and you're willing to get on your bike in the middle of winter, I think it's an uphill battle culturally in this city, because there just isn't, you can get anywhere in 20 minutes, which makes it a challenge. So for me personally, and what we're looking at in our eco district plan is that the best leverage point? When really people's, the, you know, paths don't, what they're working on, when their cost to heat their house is so much in the winter, that's a great incentive, because people are going to want to lower that cost. When there's other things that people are going to want to get on board with, because it really affects them poignantly right now, I think transit's going to be a harder sell. I think it does have the potential to be really effective in the future, but in terms of what are we actually going to get the public behind right now, I'm not sure the answer is transportation.
That's farther down the list for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
And just to add to that, in terms of transit, I think one of the things that the city can do, and this is in the plan, really relates to how the city plans for transportation. In terms of land use planning and looking into the future and how our land use is arranged so that different destinations are convenient and people can get there by walking or biking. Are there trails that will take people to convenient places? Are they safe? Are there parks? And so that's one of the major ways that the city can actually make a difference in terms of making transit easier to access.
All right, Rachel is talking pragmatically, I think, about transportation. Abby, does it drive you nuts, though?
Yes and no. You know, okay. I mean, I'm all for let's be realistic, let's be pragmatic, let's get it done. You know, whatever it's going to take, let's get it done. And if I think there's value to starting with winnable projects. You mm-hmm. know, those quick, easy things that we can implement right away, we can feel the success of that, see what we're doing. That doesn't mean we need to not think long-term where we're going. And I think, you know, that stipulation in the plan for land use planning and how do we I think it's there. I think it's there in the plan. But then, you know, and what is going to bring people in? I think Rachel makes a great point, actually, about comfort of your home. Is it warm enough in the winter? You know, or is it drafty? People feel that right away. And if we can seal it up a little and reduce their energy bills at the same time, then that's win-win for everyone. So, yes, we need to be addressing that. But of course, we need to be addressing transportation in the long term as well.
Okay, so Rachel, when it comes to that list of what is more gettable early on, then what's at the very top of the list for you if it's not transportation?
I think the things that people can actually tangibly do to some extent, your recycling, your composting. I think there are great incentives out there for energy reduction in your home and alternative energy things. I really think those are the areas that are being supported by NYSERDA, so there's state money out there for that to happen, and really that's important. So the energy reduction measures are what's being funded by the state, so I think those are going to be the best. Right now is the time to address those. And the education side of getting people to recycle more and compost more, that's going to have – people are going to start to feel like they're being greener, and I think that'll have a snowball effect that as they start to adapt in their home these personal sustainable practices, they'll want more. They'll start to see the waste, and they won't want it. And I would just like to say, I would love a light rail. Yeah. I mean, I have a map.
No, I know,
like.
I know what you're
so
saying.
I have an idealistic side.
I don't hear you maligning, you know, light rail. I don't hear you maligning other forms of transportation. I hear you looking at this. It's a culture of transportation,
yeah,
in which people feel like, number one, I can get anywhere in 20 minutes, and number two, I can park right in front of wherever I'm going and walk right in and walk right out to my car.
Yes.
And if not, I'm not going. That's a cultural change that's going to have to take place. And so I understand the point you're making. But what you just described when it comes to composting, you know, working with our energy output at home, our listeners may hear what you've talked about, what Scott's talking about with already available incentives for landlords, and think, well, do you need a climate action plan on a city level for this? But I did hear you bring up the idea of education and sort of outreach. Is that part of what you see the CAP with this, the implementation, to make sure people are sort of, that the city is working with homeowners, working with landowners, whether it's education, making sure they're aware of incentives and more?
Yeah, to some extent it's education, but as much as what's immediately effective, the reason the personal things that we can do are immediately effective, the reason the climate action plan, for me at least in my opinion, is so important is unless the city commits to being sustainable with their zoning, with their land use, with their policies, there's only so much we're going to be able to do on an individual level. Really, the city has to commit to being sustainable, and that's where the Climate Action Plan for me has its value, because it's saying from the city level, we commit to sustainability. We're going to put our policies and our procedures in line with becoming the most sustainable Rochester we can. So what's going to be effective on a personal level and the value of the Climate Action Plan might be two slightly different things. But there's definitely an educational component, given that we have this wonderful plan now that we can take to the community as a resource.
All right, Ann Spaulding. So when it comes to that commitment on sustainability, and Ann's here representing the city, she's not speaking directly perfectly for the mayor, I understand. And it's tough because this is a plan that's still a draft, that's still sort of this evolving document. But what you just heard from Rachel when it comes to the city of Rochester committing to sustainability, committing to, you know, in various ways that she just described, do you think that's in this plan? Is that part of this?
I do. And in fact, the mayor has made the commitment, both with this plan and with other programs that we have committed to. For example, we're part of the Compact of Mayors, which commits us to measure our greenhouse gas emissions community-wide, as well as for our own operations, and develop a climate action plan to reduce the emissions. One of the most important things that really hasn't been mentioned about these climate action plans is it's a tool to show us both where we are and where we want to be, and then to help us measure once we get there. So we did a greenhouse gas inventory to figure out exactly what our emissions are now. set a goal, a target reduction goal, put up a set of implementation actions, and then after a period of time, we can measure and actually see how we're doing, see what's working, what's not, and make adjustments. So it's actually a tool that will really help us both strategize and evaluate the effectiveness of what we're doing.
I have two different emails on the question of emissions, essentially asking various forms of, is this a goal where you pat yourself on the back if you get it done, or are there actual firm requirements that will push the city to actually get there when it comes to emissions in various ways? In other words, does the CAP have actual rules and guidelines set out for, here's where our emissions are, here's how we're going to get them lower, and it's not just a hope we get it done, that there are either penalties or some kind of firm enforcement in place?
So there aren't real penalties in place, but what there are identified strategies that identify that, you know, if we complete these strategies, here's the level of emissions reductions that we'll achieve. As I said, these plans are not, they're not regulatory plans.
Sure.
They're aspirational goals, and we certainly are doing and will continue to do everything we can to meet the goal. But there aren't penalties for either the city or for any other organization or residential or business that's participating.
Guidelines. Is it good enough for you, Abby?
Not necessarily, no, honestly. For example, one provision in the plan is for voluntary benchmarking. What this is large commercial buildings need to report, I think, on an annual basis, their energy usage. In New York City, benchmarking is mandatory. The plan here calls for benchmarking to be voluntary. And, you know, we do question whether a property owner is going to voluntarily say, oh, my building is terribly leaky. You know, are they going to provide that information? And the way this is important in a climate perspective and in a greenhouse gas reductions perspective is that it ties property values to energy efficiency. So if you are required to report the energy efficiency, and that number then goes forward as properties are sold, bought and sold, obviously people are going to want to buy the properties that have the better numbers in those terms. And so having that mandatory standard allows people to compare building to building, which is better and which is worse, and then incentivizes for the property owner wanting to make these energy upgrades. And making it mandatory, I realize that politically that might ruffle some feathers. Certainly there are property owners out there who would object. But, you know, if New York City can do it, we can do it too.
Okay, and then why not make it mandatory?
You know, we went back and forth on that somewhat. And, you know, I think the way we came down to it was, you know, we need to start somewhere. We need to show these businesses what the value is in doing this voluntary benchmarking. And they will see that both, you know, for a property value perspective and for their own energy efficiency and utility bills perspective, that it is valuable. And I think that we can move, you know, from where we're starting and where Abby, you know, to where Abby wants to be, you know, I think it's kind of a process that we'll be going through.
Okay. Do you fear it would be economically harmful to make it mandatory right out of the gate?
I think it could be. I mean, I think it depends on, you know, the reaction that we would get from various businesses. Some may totally embrace it and want to do it. We may have gotten pushback if we made it mandatory.
Okay. But Abby, you're saying that in other cities you haven't seen that, either that pushback or that economic harm.
Well, from what I understand, in New York City it's been very successful.
Mm-hmm. It's generally very successful in cities that are growing, mm-hmm. and in cities that, you know, that their real estate space is at a high demand, at a premium. Mm-hmm. So it's a little more difficult in cities that are struggling somewhat.
Okay. Anything else you want to add on that to close the loop there?
No.
Well, I have something to say.
Go ahead, yeah. Scott. Sure.
Well, I mean, in this city, we know we're leaders. We were leaders in the lead movement in reducing lead analysis, mm-hmm. and a lot of landlords at the time said that was going to be this undue burden, and we did it, and we reduced lead poisoning by 80%. So I think that, you know, looking towards the future, we can do the same kind of thing for climate change.
And then actually, I do want to. Just make one more comment, and that is that, you know, Rochester, we are a city of innovators, a city of visionary thinkers, and our city is headed up, you know, in terms of, I realize many, many years there, we were sort of in decline, but I think this is not only, This is a moment of time in which we have the opportunity to seize the moment and take advantage of this. And being bold about it now, getting out in front of other cities in terms of where we are at, is going to attract people to move to Rochester, want to be here, want to stay here. That is in the plan explicitly. So, you know, there's demand for climate action nationally and locally. And we need to take advantage of that.
cityofrochester.gov/climateactionplan if you want to check it out yourself. We've also tweeted links. Megan Mack and I have tweeted links if you want to check it out. We're late for our only break. The phones are ringing. We're going to get back to your phone calls in a moment. And if you don't get through, or if you are concerned about the climate and about climate change and the City of Rochester's climate action plan, there is an open house meeting tomorrow, 6 to 8 p.m. tomorrow night. That's in the City Hall atrium. And they'd like anybody who cares enough to either learn or to offer their feedback to come on out 6 to 8 p.m. tomorrow night. And then over the next the coming weeks and maybe a couple of months, we could see the plan tweaked, revised, and eventually adopted maybe by the end of the year or close to it. Fair, Ann, is that about right?
Yeah, within the next probably three to four months.
Okay, very good. Let's get that only break, and we're going to come back to your phone calls on the other side of this break on Connections. Hey, we have no break. How about that? So this is one of those, it's election day. We all took our headphones off. We were going to get chatting. Oh, there it is. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on the next Connections.
I don't know if they can still hear me.
We did it, America. We got through this seemingly endless election season. And the question now is, where do we go next? Where do the parties go next? We'll talk to Democrats first hour about their reaction to the national election and local elections. The Republicans in the second hour. Join the conversation Wednesday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We told our technology system that if you just get through Election Day, you can take a long nap. And it thought it was Wednesday. It's still Tuesday. So we got a little bit of molasses in the system. But we're back and running. And as you just heard, I'm going to be back here tonight. I hope you join us tonight for election coverage. But right now on Connections, we're talking about the City of Rochester's Climate Action Plan with Ann Spaulding, Energy and Sustainability Manager for the City of Rochester. Scott Oliver is Deputy for Energy Programs at Pathstone. Susan Hopkins is a project planner for Bergman Associates. They've been assisting with the city on this coming together plan. Rachel Walsh is an eco-district coordinator for Greentopia. And Abby McHugh-Griffa is a member of RPCC. That's the Rochester People's Climate Coalition. And she's co-leader of the Citizens Climate Lobby of Rochester. Let me get your phone calls. Linda in Parenton next up. Go ahead, Linda.
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Evan. So I've been hearing a lot about environmental justice lately, meaning that working to address reducing emissions and adapting to climate change is the perfect opportunity to also work toward addressing social inequality and the gap between rich and poor, and vice versa. So I'm wondering if there's anything about that in the Climate Action Plan, and if so, doesn't that also mean that the transition to much better mass transit would address that problem, never mind looking at it from the perspective of somebody who's white and lives in Fairport or Parenton and whether taking the bus is convenient for them?
All right, Linda, why don't you stay on the line, and repeating for Scott Oliver, who doesn't have headphones on because that's how many people there are in the studio. She's just asking about, in many ways, environmental justice and how it sort of relates to transportation and these issues, and who wants to start here? Who wants to grab it first here? Ann Spaulding from the City of Rochester, you want to respond to some of Linda and Parenton there? Go ahead.
Sure. Thanks, Linda. So, you know, we did recognize in the plan that often people of lower incomes or people who have disabilities are often disproportionately affected by climate change. So we explicitly call that out in the plan. And then we do realize that many of our implementation actions will need to focus on helping people of those communities with access to either cleaner transportation, cleaner energy options, renewable energy, and those sort of things. So yes, we do recognize that you know, environmental justice is an integral part of the implementation of the Climate Action Plan.
Okay, Abby?
Yeah, and we definitely saw that in the plan and appreciate that that was included in the plan. I guess my one, you know, since I have to push back, since that's my role here, is to wonder what is the ongoing mechanism for continuing to keep those people involved and at the table. I think that could be made clearer in the plan. I know there was, I believe it did say something that the implementation work groups would include representatives from underserved communities. And I would actually love to know more about what that means, what that will look like. So that's my question back to you, Anne.
Okay, Anne?
So yes, I mean, we do, the implementation work groups, we want to make sure that they're inclusive with people who will be affected by climate change. So, you know, we'll need to make sure that the groups that we develop do include people from underserved communities, and we'll be reaching out to all of our stakeholders for suggestions, for ideas, for people to contact to make sure that all of the appropriate parties are brought into the implementation process.
Yeah, so just on an ongoing basis, you know, so many questions of land use come up through this plan, through climate action in general. And we do feel very strongly at RPCC that the people who are actually living on that land need to be the ones making decisions about what's happening to it. So keeping that as an integral part of the conversation and making sure those voices are heard is essential.
Linda, anything to follow up with?
I guess I just want to push a little harder on the mass transit part of the question and emphasize the fact that when Rochester is the fifth poorest city in the country, I really hope that the plan considers the way that improving the mass transit system would both reduce emissions, which is the most important part of the plan, as well as help our inner city folks to close the economic gap.
Thanks, Linda. I think, and it's probably worth saying here, that too often we kind of silo the conversations. We talk about the anti-poverty initiative, we talk about climate action, and we don't sort of tie them together. And Linda is clearly tying them together. And I think it sounds like at least this administration understands that and views that as a sensible thing to do, yeah?
Absolutely. And, you know, regarding transportation, one of the things that we're doing as far as transportation and helping some of the underserved community is a van pool pilot project where we will have vans that will go around and pick up people to make sure that they can get to work. So this is a kind of a mass transit program, and it'll also reduce emissions and help the underserved community.
Rachel Walsh from Greentopia, you want to weigh in there?
Well, and in this situation, when you're talking about mass transit to the suburbs, it's difficult to make a distinction between these two because there's almost two separate issues here of inner city mass transit, which should definitely get better and most definitely has a social justice aspect. But the highest polluters are those committing, you know, coming in from the suburbs. So if we focus on mass transit out to the suburbs, which is really going to have the biggest climate effect because those are your major commuters, it's serving those that are outside of the city. So in some ways, it's just difficult. This is a very complicated situation in which climate and social justice are definitely linked, but in our specific context where we would get the most climate change for putting in mass transit, it is serving people who tend to be a little bit on the outsides of the city and would be in a higher income bracket. So I think it does, you definitely need to address both, but it's a complicated situation.
Okay. Susan Hopkins, do you want to weigh in there?
Sure. I think, you know, tying back to the idea of social justice and sort of ongoing and continuing involvement, one of the things we're also trying to do is make sure that this plan is incorporated or aligns well with the city's ongoing comprehensive plan update, which is, you know, you talk about silos, it's a somewhat separate process, but there's so much overlap in the implementation and in the goals themselves. And so that's one of the things that we're doing is making sure that, you know, that as the comprehensive plan process moves forward with community outreach and involvement, that, you know, these topics are also included in that discussion.
All right, we just got a pile of new questions, and I'm going to get to your phone calls. I want to hit, well, let's do this. Let's get Brad in Rochester on the phone first, and then we'll get your emails. Brad, go ahead, Brad.
Hi, I've been on a great show.
Thanks.
I wanted to find out, and I apologize if it was discussed the first 20 minutes. I missed the first 20 minutes of the show, but I wanted to find out what is the role of passive house in the plan? Is there going to be requirements for new builds to maybe go in that direction, or are there going to be possible incentives for existing homeowners to be able to convert their house to passive. And full disclosure, I do know Scott, and I do know that he is interested in making his house passive if he can. So I was just curious what the role was in the plan, action plan for that.
Brad, thanks for the phone call. Scott Oliver from Pathstone, he is asking about passive houses. And first of all, let's define the term. Grab that microphone and tell us what the term is for people who don't know much about it.
Okay, short summary. The passive house is a highly insulated, a very efficient house that uses little or no electricity or gas to heat and run itself. So, you know, a really tight passive house might be able to heat itself literally with its refrigerator. Does the heat put off by a refrigerator?
Okay, and so, are you doing a passive house yourself? Is he was implying that he knows something about you.
Oh, that was Brad. I just moved into a new house and in the city on Maplewood, and it's a beautiful house. But I'm working on getting it close to passive. I want to work towards getting it to a passive house standard, but I'm working. Also want to work towards figuring out how to do that so that everyone can do it. Like my last house was a house. Just a city house in North Winton Village that was built in 1915, and I wanted to try to insulate it the best I could to figure out how everyone could do that, again, towards that equitability. There we go.
Okay.
Thank you. Piece of trying to figure out, that's what we do at Pathstone, is try to figure out how to make energy efficiency good for everyone.
And just a note there, if you've got questions about passive houses and related issues tonight, you want to do that again? Mention what's going on tonight?
Yeah, we're having a meeting at 404 East Avenue at 5:30 to go over New York State's energy efficiency programs. So,
okay, great place to kind of connect with Scott and learn more. Abby, did you want to jump in there too?
Absolutely. Brad, thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate you bringing up the issue of passive house. We would love to see something specifically about passive house and aiming for that standard in the plan, certainly. And another event that your listeners might be interested in knowing about, especially if they don't know what passive house is, because that's one of our main challenges right now, is that people don't know what passive house is. But once they find out, they want one. I want one. But Passive House, International Passive House Days are this coming weekend, from 1 to 6 this coming Friday and from 10 to 6 on Saturday. There will be a Passive House open for you to take a look at in Honeoye Falls. The address is 340 Quaker Meeting House Road. And again, that's 1 to 6 on Friday, 10 to 6 on Saturday. And on Saturday at 5 o'clock, there'll be a blower door test. So you can really witness for yourself exactly how amazingly energy efficient these houses are.
Okay. To your emails we go here. And Dan wrote, and let me pull up Dan's email. Dan wants to know two questions for the panel. First of all, he says, what about the oil trains that run through the city? Does the Climate Action Plan weigh in on that? And second of all, since our city's resources extend to the Finger Lakes, do any parts of the plan pertain specifically to those precious bodies of water? That's from Dan. So Ann Spaulding, let's just hit it one at a time. Oil trains. Does the Climate Action Plan for Rochester that's been proposed relate to oil trains at all?
So no, not specifically. The plan does not address the danger of the oil trains that come through the city, mostly because those oil trains in and of themselves, if they operate properly, are not a source of greenhouse gas emissions in the city.
Okay. And the second one, since our city's resources extend to the Finger Lakes, do any parts of the plan pertain specifically to those precious bodies of water?
So we do have a water section. One of the focus areas is clean water, and it addresses green infrastructure and other measures that are intended to reduce stormwater pollution prevention and runoff that would affect the bodies of water that surround the city.
Okay, we're down to our last 2 minutes. Abby, some feedback there. Go ahead.
Real quick, just about the trains. I think this points to another real challenge, that these issues shouldn't necessarily have to be dealt with so much at the local level. One issue with the trains is jurisdiction. Who has the power to say that the trains can't come through our area? But a lot of these problems could be dealt with if we just, at the national level, were to implement a price on carbon. So again, that's, some of the work I do with Citizens Climate Lobby is all about that, carbon fee and dividend. If we could just encourage our congresspeople to put a price on carbon, then so much of these local issues would just take care of themselves. So to keep our sights there as well, I think, is important.
Carbon fee and dividend is something we covered on this broadcast not that long ago, and you can easily look up past shows related to climate change, bookmarked at wxxinews.org/connections. Down to our last minute or so, what did we not cover that's in this plan? At least what's one prong that we missed here? Abby?
Natural gas. Natural gas accounts for, I believe it's over half of the total emissions generated in our community. And so we need a specific mechanism to look at how to reduce our dependence on natural gas. And just to throw it out there, you know, anyone who says that natural gas is a bridge fuel, that's a little silly at this point. Clearly, natural gas is the problem. But, you know, one thing that I know Scott is very much in favor of is a ban on low-efficiency furnaces in the city, the sale of low-efficiency furnaces. And that would be huge, in fact, just to
Could that be in the climate action plan? Is that something you want to see in the plan? Abby, Scott?
That would be wonderful.
Okay. Scott, is that something you want to see in the plan?
Well, that would be a little bit more regulation than I think the plan has. I don't think the plan has that kind of regulatory weight. But it would be
PCC wants a little more regulatory weight than is currently in the plan. That does seem to be a divide.
It'd be nice to see that as a goal, of course. You know, and if we're looking at switching away from gas to electricity, which is, you know, renewable options, we really need to look at energy efficiency, of course.
All right, 20 seconds on this side of the room. Anything we missed? Go ahead, Susan.
I just want to reiterate the importance of education and getting the message out about this plan. If you take a look at a copy of it, great information. Your listeners will learn a lot about what they can do on an individual level. So check it out.
All right. You can find it at cityofrochester.gov/climateactionplan. You've got plenty of time to review it before tomorrow night. Then you can go out to the City Hall atrium, 6 to 8 p.m. down at City Hall. It's an open house. And they want to hear from the public on this. This is a plan that is still in process, hasn't been adopted yet. Sometime early 2017 is the likely adoption, so it's your chance to get feedback for the city. And I just want to thank Ann Spaulding, Energy and Sustainability Manager for the City of Rochester, for being here, being in studio, representing the city, and thank you for your time. It's been great having you here. Scott Oliver, Deputy for Energy Programs at Pathstone. Thank you, Scott. Abby McHugh-Griffin with RPCC. Thank you, Abby.
Thank you.
Let's see here. Who else is on my list? Rachel Walsh from Greentopia. Thank you. Susan Hopkins from Bergman. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great day, everybody. Go vote. We'll talk to you tomorrow.